Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is our final segment, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I've been giving away so many Betty Boops here, the blues and the pinks. We're at Conrad's. I've been holding the seafood up, but I brought, like, the real guy here, Tony Conrad from Conrad's. Do I say seafood? Do I say crabs? Because you have different names on all of these places, man. And they're all a little different. This is different than the little shack I saw pop up out on Joppa Road 20 years ago by my radio station.
Yeah, I hear you. We were going to go with the Baltimore Rat Company, but that wasn't going to fly so well. Didn't really have the seafood theme to it. So we stuck with Conrad's Crabs. We made it simple. My last name and what I catch, crabs.
Well, you do this honestly. I mean, there's a lot of places that serve crabs or serve a crab cake.
Yeah.
You're the guy that actually goes out on the water. This is almost backwards. People open a restaurant and then worry about where to get the crabs. You fall in love with crabbing. I spent all last summer going around the state when crab was $55 a pound, finding out who's catching them, where they are, down in Cambridge, Chop Tank and all that. You've been on these waters how long?
I don't know. I can't count. I'm 47 years old now, so I've been doing it a long time.
Fall in love as a kid?
I did. It's been in the family for a long time, and as a kid I was doing it on the Potomac with my cousins and uncles and
Are you
aunts.
From that area?
My family's originally from Pope's Creek, which is down in La Plata area.
I know. I went to Pope's Creek. There's
okay.
a beautiful restaurant in the water down there.
It's called Captain Billy's?
Captain Billy's. I was at Captain Billy's.
My great-great-great-great-grandmother is the one who started that.
You can see the bridge from there.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful porch
area. Yeah, beautiful.
Knotty pine
and
crabs everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a bowl of crab soup there on a cloudy day. I did 30 crab cakes in 30 days, and we picked Billy's.
Yeah.
And I have a picture of me in front of Pope's Creek.
Yeah.
So that's your background.
He's my idol.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's my background.
Wow.
That's my bloodline.
So how do you wind up in Northeast Baltimore? I mean, literally, that's all your places.
Yeah.
I thought you were a guy from, like, Lock Raven because you opened a place near Lock Raven.
It was my mother's side of the family, and I guess generations ago, we've been here forever, and generations ago, those people kind of migrated up here, and my dad's side lived up here in the city for forever.
But you spent your childhood on the Potomac down in that southern area.
When you say yes. Well,
first time you threw a crab pot in the water?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So my background is I grew up in East Point, Dundalk, and there's water everywhere when we were kids. I wasn't much of, like, a fisherman, still not to this day, although I did some fly fishing last year. But I distinctly remember crabbing as a kid all the time. My family, we had a pot. We had a crab, chicken necks.
Yeah.
We would throw in at Bear Creek, usually.
Oh, yeah.
Right where the Bear Creek Bridge and Wise Avenue.
Sure.
I spent a lot of childhood summer days there pulling out crabs, trying to measure them, make sure they're the right size.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't caught a crab or been in a cage since my childhood.
Okay.
So I don't say it left me or whatever, but I watch people do this for industry. This is serious business, man.
Yeah.
I mean, and the bay and the volatility of it and years. I saw the oysters were good this week,
mm-hmm.
right, this year.
Mm-hmm.
Crabbing for you, when did it become something you want to make a living doing? You were doing something else with your life, right?
We were. My parents, like I said, it was my mother's side. It was the waterman side. And as a kid growing up, I always was drawn to it. We would spend, you know, weekends down in Pope's Creek or go with my grandmother and we go for rides down there and see, you know, Cousin Billy and the family. It's just something I was always drawn to it. And I guess I was probably 10 or 11 years old. And for some reason, every weekend I was on my bike living in the Lock Raven area, riding my bike to Lock Raven Reservoir, you know, and my mom and dad would be like, Where's Anthony? You know, and 3 hours later I come riding back on my mongoose up Lock Raven Boulevard and I'd have a backpack full of fish and, you know, I would always lie
you
love to
the
him.
Water.
I did. I would lie to him and tell him, oh, I was just down at Roy's, you know, playing soccer or whatever and sorry. And, you know, there were no cell phones back then. There was no, you know, bell loud enough
you
to
could
ring.
Get lost.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you were home before the street lights came on, you were good. And then I guess when I turned, 14 or 15 and started having friends that had cars, I wasn't allowed to drive in a car with anybody else because everybody else was bad and they were the devil and they were getting in accidents and they were bad influences, according to my mom and my dad. And, you know,
same as my friends.
Yeah, all right. They're all bad people. And we would go to other places as opposed to Lock Raven. I just kind of, you know, fell in love with that. And
you didn't have to go to Pope Street to crab.
Correct.
Right?
No. Yeah. And it was probably my 14-year-old summer when I met a gentleman named Bill Gunther. He lived up on the Bush River. His wife still lives there now. And he was a commercial crabber. And I got part-time job working on his commercial crab boat, since he was closer to Baltimore than Pope's Creek, clearly.
First time you get $100 for catching crabs, that must have felt like...
I got $25 a day.
$25 a day.
Yeah,
all right.
$25 a day. And it was backbreaking, you know, work, jellyfish in the eye, you know, nipples burning from all the jellyfish rubbing against you in the chicken wire pots and shaking them out and getting bit. But I was like, I loved it. I mean, I was addicted to it. And then I guess there was like a 3 or 4 year lapse there where Mom and Dad said, you got to go to college, you got to get an education. And I still, you know, found myself on the weekends doing, you know, crabbing and fishing as a
commercial or
recreation,
just for fun?
Recreation.
Okay.
Recreation. And went to college, got that cool degree. So that told everybody that I was, you know, smart and, you know, I could, you know, rule the world. And got a real job at a place called Interconnect Services. Was selling voice and data cabling and phone systems. And
was that over on in White Marsh?
Yeah.
Interconnect up all my radio station in 1998.
Oh, wow.
Interconnect
Services. Small world.
Absolutely.
I bartended with a guy named Dave Sprinkle, and he was my inspiration to come to ISI, because my wife and I, when we were working at Michael's, as I was a bartender and she was a server, she fell in love with me.
And Michael's Cafe in Timonium.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
And not Michael's on Eastern Avenue in Dunbar, because there's another Michael's.
Right. Yep. And we kind of crossed paths there, as well as my cross paths with David. And he said, hey, I got this great, you know, job. You want to be better than a bartender? And I said, well, there's nothing better than a bartender. I'm making a lot of money. I'm meeting a lot of people, having a lot of fun. And he said, well, come on over here and work with... you know, see what it's like over here. It's this real job, you know, where you can sell stuff and make money and wear a shirt and tie, and people will say, oh, you're an employee and you're a worker and you're like one of the people. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So we weren't married yet, and I took on that job, and I hated it because it involved, you know, listening to other people tell you what to do, and, you know, you were based off of your work that you performed, and you had to sell this, and it just, it was a long 2 years of, you know, making good money but not having a good time at all. And it was at that time where I was moonlighting, and I started saying to myself, this hobby is becoming really fun and I don't want to work. Well, you got to be able to pay your bills, and, you know, I got a wife saying to me, well, you can't just keep going crabbing every day. And my cousin Billy had a friend at the time, he was alive at the time, that he turned me on to and says he's got a license. He actually got sick at the time. And I called him up. I got his commercial license from him, and I started moonlighting on the weekends while working at Interconnect Services and bartending at Michael's on the side, catching crabs. And at the time, I was probably making an extra $300 a week, but it was the most fun I've ever had. I was like, I'm doing my passion.
You're looking forward to it every day.
Yeah,
sure.
I was like, so it got even more of a sickness where I would start waking up 6 days a week in the morning and crabbing until about 10 o'clock in the morning before I would work. Well, then ISI kind of caught on to it when I kept saying I was going on these sales calls and not coming into work until 10:30, 11 o'clock. So I think I got fired. I'm not 100% positive, but I think I got fired. Long story short, the owner of the company, Gary Shuhart, really good friends with him to this day. And he's been very inspirational in the job that I have now, because he gave me the place to keep my boat, even though I didn't work for him anymore. But I was able to keep my work boat there, and at the time it was just a little Carolina skiff. And, you know, I was small time, but I was big in my own mind. I was loving it, and I was, you know, it was backbreaking work. And he's like, you know, follow your dream. So I followed my dream, but I wasn't making any money. And I was only a crabber then for 6 days a week, not bringing him enough money. My wife was the breadwinner. I was still bartending, also trying to make a little extra money. And we kind of knew that we wanted to do something food-related with my crabbing industry, because my wife loved working at Michael's, and I think at the time she got promoted to like
good a...
Good crab cake. Yes, it is. And great people, very, very instrumental.
Love the Dallas folks, absolutely.
Very instrumental in who we are today because of what we learned from the family. And we knew we wanted to do something, and at the time, I believe Michael Dellis had offered Andrea and her daughter Lauren an opportunity to open a place up in Jacksonville, Maryland. There was a Exxon gas station, and there was a oil spill up there.
I remember that. I had a friend that lived near there.
And that, for some reason, was going to be the location that Michael was buying, and they were going to turn into a restaurant that Lauren and Andrew were going to work. And I was like, hey, maybe I can, you know, sell you some crabs. We can sell some crabs out there, blah, blah, blah. And I kept crabbing, and then I got a job at the place called Performance Food Groups, which is a food sales company out in Carroll County. It was actually then called Carroll County Foods. So I then became a food sales rep, as well as I was crabbing as many days of the week as the weather would let me, as well as still bartending three or four nights a week at Michael's. And again, I found money at the food service company and bartending, but it wasn't what was making me happy. What was making me happy was waking up and not making any money catching crabs, but going out there.
What do you love about crabbing so much? What's the obsession?
It's I don't
everybody
know.
That knows you tells me you're obsessed with it. Like when I met you.
I don't know. It's something in the blood. I mean, you got to be an idiot. You got to just have something wrong in your head to become a crabber or a full-time waterman.
Is there something about you that knows where the crabs are in some way like that, that you get truly better at that, at looking at water and saying...
Like a crab whisperer?
I guess. But if you're out there all day and you want to maximize what you're doing,
yeah,
like fishermen say there's a hole or there's a ripple or there's something that would attract fish.
Yeah.
Is there anything fundamentally that attracts crabs?
Absolutely.
Salinity? Salinity?
Yeah. Salinity.
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 Salinity. Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely learn where the crabs are, where the crabs are going to be, and where they are not going to be.
I need to drink more to learn how to say that.
It's understandable. I mean...
We all have to do that.
Yes.
So Tony Conrad is here. He is Conrad Scrab, just in case you tuned in. We're hearing your story.
Yes.
About this delicious crab cake.
Yes. Rewind to start from the beginning if you haven't heard it yet. So doing that, we then, that fell through, the oil thing, I don't know, whatever fell through with the whole restaurant. And Michael came to me with his friend Frank Patilla, who owns Mr. Fish, and said, hey, why don't you guys think about opening up a seafood market? We'll, you know, money back it, and we'll have a seafood market.
And this is your place on Chopper Road.
And Andrew and Tony can run it. Tony can be a waterman, do whatever he wants to do. And I was like, that's great. Andrew was like, I want a restaurant. I don't want to have to, you know, do carry. I want to wait on people. I want to have something really nice where people come in and I can talk to them all.
Like this?
Correct. Yeah, just like this. And I at the time was like, well, we'll do whatever. But what came up at the time was the gentleman that owned Joppa Seafood. He had had an injury at the time and passed away. He was under the... construction of this of the old Joppa Seafood, which was a hole in the wall, a couple cinder block, you know, walls, and a piece of plywood and some glass that was always broken. The glass was broken in the front for 15 years.
I remember when you came there, I'm like, hey, they fixed this whole shack up and they had a little market here.
It doesn't stink anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't ever went, never got close enough to smell it, but I looked at it.
So I lived behind there on MG Road my entire life. And Joppa Seafood was always right there. And I never, you know, looked forward to it. Never.
Casey's on the corner of the bar, right?
It was Sarando's at the time.
Sarando's.
It'll always be Sarando's. It'll never be Casey's to me. It was Sarando's. Because that was one of my first, you know, restaurant jobs on the side is when I was 12 or 13, cleaning dirty dishes and scrubbing the floors and being yelled at by a Greek man about the urinals are dirty. And I had no idea what he was saying, but I would just smile and go do it. Mr. Sam, he was the greatest. And, so anyway, we kind of opened up the market.
I got to give lottery
That's
tickets.
That's fine.
We got people leaving here.
If it's a winner, bring it back.
Maryland lottery tickets. Let yourself play. Win. Go win something. There you go.
You won at Conrad's.
You win $100. Let me know. All right.
Come back to Conrad's and spend it. So, sorry.
That's right.
Where
you don't
were
have
we?
To pimp your place when you're in here. They know how good the food is. They were already here.
Oh, that's right. They were here.
They looked like they had a great day. They were having a blast. They've been sitting here for an hour and a half. They're happy. That's why I gave Maryland lottery tickets.
That's right.
So the little shack that I started passing on Joppa Road by the Bell Lock Diner, that happened in 4 or 5 or 6, somewhere in there? 2004, 5, 6, somewhere in there?
When we took it over?
Yeah.
2007.
7, okay. Because I know I had the radio station. I saw your place pop up. I know I had some employees to stop by. I think when you opened, we had some food, some shrimp, and some stuff like that. But this has really spawned all these locations. And I guess I think of you as serving crabs at Ripken Stadium, too. I know it was up there.
Yeah.
Just the first time I heard your name, heard Conrad's.
Yeah.
It's sort of ubiquitous now after 15 years.
Yeah.
You have seasonings and locations in different neighborhoods, but this thing was really seated about you just wanting to be on a boat at 6 in the morning catching crabs.
Yeah,
right?
And it's kind of stemmed. It's always going to be that. It's still going to be that. I mean, I was on the water today. My passion is the water. It's always going to be the water. I mean, these restaurants and the markets will go before my boat goes.
When can you catch crabs and when can you not?
April 1st is the official start day. December 15th is the official get out of the water, you're going to get fined.
Every crab in here is your crab?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
So time of the year matters.
Time
I talk
of the
to
year,
people about this all the
amount
time.
Amount of what
right?
crabs what we're catching. I mean, I can't catch enough crabs to supply to the five locations. It's not going to happen. I'm not that good. And nobody's that good.
Right.
But
well, I know that. I mean, and I've learned a lot about the industry, a lot about where this crab cake comes from, how it's picked.
Sure.
The fact that they've tried to automate and they can't. I had Ed Mullen here talking about STEM earlier. You know, Maryland tried to figure out how to pick a crab with a robotics and can't do it because every single one of them is different.
Oh, yeah.
And I have talked to, you know, Damie down at Fadley's and Jam Clayton about all the shells that they were when you try to automate picking a crab.
Yeah.
But all that being said, there's just the supply and demand issue of crabs, what time of the year they run, where they're tastier, Northern Bay, more salt, later in the year, fatter, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
This is all science you knew 30 years ago when you were a kid, though, right? Or no?
I mean, you kind of learn it as you go. I mean, you say the older you get, the wiser you get. I mean, it's the truth with being a fisherman. I mean, an old fisherman that's out there in his boat by himself and he comes with just as many crabs as those four young guys that are saying, oh, I pulled 500 crab pots today by hand. And the old guy's like, you know, you're stupid. You know, work smarter, not harder is the whole, you know.
What's smarter in crabbing for you?
I can't tell you that on the.
Come on. Like we're here. No. Let us in on the secrets.
No, then everybody's going to want to be a crabber. Can't. Sorry. Got to go. So anyway, back to the story, Nestor. So,
oh, you're not going to tell me the secret of crabbing?
So then we opened up the crab house, and Michael and Frank said, we can't work with Tony anymore. He's going the wrong way, and our wrong way was I was a firm believer in buying from local crabbers. If our produce was going to be local, it was going to be local, and they had a different vision. And I said that, I mean, this is before the whole farm to table, fresh catch, all that stuff ever hit. And I knew it was the right thing to do, and it's what I wanted. When I walked into a place to eat, I always wanted to know that it was fresh, domestic, you know, product picked or caught by, you know, domestic. You know, people, and I got tired of seeing the Made in China labels on everything and anything you got, and crates.
Well, Venezuelan crab. I mean, I'm Venezuelan, so Lake Maracaibo is where my people are from. It's the only other place in the world that kind of has a blue crab. I mean, the stuff that's coming in cans. And I see people serving crab cakes for $12.95.
Yeah.
You know, like it
it's
tastes
not
similar,
crab.
But it doesn't taste the same. And people like us know the difference.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
It has that blandness, that fishiness almost to it.
Artificial flavoring, like they add salt and they add the extra seasoning to try to cover it up and fluff it up with a lot of egg and bread to say, oh, it's a 12-ounce crab cake. Well, no, it ain't. Not for
$13.99. You can't do that here at all. I mean, you can't do that in Dundalk. Around the Beltway, a part of the crab cake tour was I knew every place I went would brag on their crab cake. Everybody, every bar in Fells Point has a crab cake they're proud of.
Yeah.
And everybody does it a little differently.
Best in the world.
World's best, right?
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. But for the Maryland crab, the perception for people here is, oh, there's crabs on the wall. We're from Maryland. I've seen them. They're on the corner. You pull them out of the water. They must all come from there.
Yeah.
I've just learned like that.
No.
And I've had people, true blue people, obviously.
Yeah.
And I know that's important to you, too.
Very true.
And I've learned about that last year. But we can't serve Maryland crab 12 months a year. There aren't enough of them. There aren't enough pickeries. And it's taken me a lot of research to figure this out because I don't think most people know that.
Yeah.
What a delicate product this is.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where we pride ourselves. Our crab cake's not the biggest, but I can guarantee you this. It's 100% Maryland crab meat, and it's not going to be the cheapest because, as you said, going to J.M. Clayton and seeing how much it costs to pick, you know, crabs and knowing, you know, where it comes from, who's picking it, and what they're paying, and all their fees and taxes to have to do it. It's not cheap to pick a Maryland crab. I mean, back in the day, people say, oh, you used to buy crab meat for $10 or $5 a pound. Well, you know, that's
special.
Yeah, exactly, the special.
Right.
And
crab cake to me, and I've told this story a million times. I'm from Dundalk, from East Point. My family didn't have much. my mom would go down to the Pantry Pride and pick up some special meat. She'd mix in some breadcrumbs, some mustard, mayo, celery seed, Old Bay, whatever, J.O., whatever you're into, Worcestershire. Mm-hmm. Put that in there, mix it all up, maybe even parsley. And she'd fry that sucker like a hockey puck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? some saltines, right?
Yeah.
Maybe some mustard. I'm not a mustard guy. I would do a cocktail. But, like, that was a crab cake to me all my life.
Yeah.
And all of the Dundalk carryouts, whether it was Ross's, Neptune, every sub shop had a crab cake.
Absolutely.
And they were fried, and they were like little hockey pucks. They're still delicious.
Yeah.
But that's not what you're doing.
No.
And that's not what I see on Eastern Shore or more upscale places.
Absolutely.
That the last 15 years, this jumbo lump thing has become something that people get off a plane here and want to eat it here because they ain't getting it in Chicago or Atlanta or anywhere else.
It's gone from a poor man's food, and that's what, you know, most families were in Baltimore, and my family, that's what we ate. We ate codfish cakes, crab cakes.
Salmon.
Bluefish cakes.
Salmon out of a
cakes.
Can? Absolutely. My mom did salmon.
Yeah. Pink salmon. I have nightmares about my mom making salmon cakes and saying, come on, it's time to eat. I could smell them the day before she was making
them. Salty. Oh, yeah.
But that's what we ate. And
this is delicious.
Nowadays, it's becoming you got to be a multimillionaire to buy a pound of crab meat or to buy a thing of, you know, fresh fish. It's just...
Are we going to have a problem this summer again with this?
I think if there's no pickers because of whatever the government's doing to get...
H2B, I've done a lot with that.
Yeah, I don't want to get... I
get into it.
I'm not going to talk politics because I'm a bad political talker. But that's the problem. I mean, if we can't get people... The labor is the thing that kills that. And if the picking houses tell you it's not, the biggest force they have against them is the labor to pick those crabs. I mean, a bushel of crabs is going to go down to $20, $30 for picking crabs regardless. So their price per bushel is no difference at the... you know, lowest that it was 20 years ago. Some years it goes down to $15, $12 a bushel these guys are paying. That's not where it's getting... That's not what's killing them. What's killing them is how much they got to pay for the labor.
Well, and then you got a crab that you got to get to a table and how long the crab can sit there before it's picked and steamed.
Right.
I've watched that process and I've watched...
And it's a lot to it.
It's an art.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a skill.
Yeah.
It really is.
Everybody says they have fresh picked crab meat, but I mean, there's only a couple out there that really do it.
I haven't gotten a shell yet.
No.
I'm halfway through.
No. The Brooks family, they do a great job.
Yeah. You know that.
Absolutely. We buy their meat, yeah.
That's why it tastes so good.
Yeah, that's right.
Dude, Jack. All right, Jack.
Nope.
Jack lent me his cooler last summer. I drove around with it also. Tony Conrad's here. We're
Bill's
comrades.
Cooler than Jack. Bill's much cooler than Jack. Bill Brooks. It's his brother.
I'll hang with him this summer when I go down to Cambridge. Right. So from give me a little crabbing. I know you don't want to be too insider, but where the crabs come from, the salination, the way they taste, what river, what bed, that all really matters.
Yeah.
And I guess for a guy like you, you could taste a crab and
absolutely
know time of the season it's from, where it is. I mean...
Yeah. A true Mariner can take a crab that's caught in the Ocean City Back Bay of Assawoman, steam that up, put it on a table. They can take a crab from the Potomac River, steam it up, put it on a table. They can take a crab from the Tangiers Down, steam it up, put it on a table. And they can take a crab from the Upper Bay, north of the Bay Bridge, steam it up, put it on a table. And they all taste totally different if you know if you're a crab eater.
Upper Bay above the Bay Bridge.
The farther up the bay you go, the better the crab. Because of the salinity is constantly changing. You get fresh salt. And those big male crabs are swimming towards that fresh water. They're going to that nutrient-rich, I guess, you know, oxygen.
The grasses and
the grass shrimp. What they're eating. I mean, their taste buds are constantly changing. They're eating different things
when
on their walk up.
When you say it's better, what do you? It's sweeter.
It's
right?
a sweeter
it's
meat.
A sweeter
yeah,
meat.
We just had something we caught last week, and we sat down, and my wife, we've been eating Louisiana crabs all winter, and she says, oh my God, you almost taste the sugar in them. I mean, it almost tastes like somebody opened up a jar of Domino's sugar and infiltrated it into the meat of the crab, and that's what you're eating. Whereas if you eat a seaside crab from that Ocean City, it has that real strong, salty taste.
Briny.
Like,
briny.
Yeah, it's kind of like being washed up in a big wave when you're on the beach and you got a mouthful of salt. That's what that, you know, that, I mean, it's not bad, but it has that, you know, distinct brinier, you know, salt taste to it. So it's just...
This is the best conversation I've ever had about tasting a crab. When you started saying I could cook a crab from this year, nobody's ever done that on this show.
Well
that's because you're the
crab
guy.
Let's do it.
So you could do like a crab taste challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What about your seasonings? I know you guys work with J.O. Am I correct saying that?
So J.O. mixes our spice for us. Our spice is handcrafted by us and us only. We mixed it, my wife and I. And
you win awards for your crabs, right? Is this the same seasoning on the crab?
So just like J.O. seasoning has a number one and a number two, meaning crab seasoning and seafood seasoning. One just has less or no salt, and the other one has
a lot of salt.
Like an Allburger salt. When we first started, we used something called an Allburger salt, which was a really
not as distinct, granular.
Right. It was more like a flaky, longer, like slivers of like skin. It was what it looked like, but it was salt, and it just the way it melted on the crab and into the seasoning was just incredible. And then there's seven or eight other special spices in there that nobody has. And J.O., we went to J.O., we went to a couple other different spice companies, and we said, how much can you mix this for us? And J.O. was actually the best company to work with. They were the nicest.
I know Ginger a little bit. Yeah.
They're great people. Great people.
I'm here tonight. Just curious.
Music's on. Yeah, we'll have it in a little bit. Yeah, a little later. Absolutely.
Sorry. Thanks for coming to Conrad's tonight.
They love the show.
Thank you.
They love the show.
Bye, Conrad's.
So for you with making crabs in a pot when you're 14 years old, you bring them back, you're excited about catching. You were as excited about eating them, though, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So seasonings, why this? Is this a family thing you've had forever, or just your
own thing? As a kid, we used to buy big boxes of J.O. spice, and I used to always say it's good, but I can make it better. And I'd always used to take home spices, like a lot of families do in Maryland. They take, you know, different spices and they add it to either Old Bay or J.O., and they make it their own proprietary spice, where this is the Smith family.
I like it pepperier.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, this J.O. was always the backbone of it. And being a local company, J.O., I mean, they were the company that we went to and said, hey, this is our recipe. Here's what we want to do. And they said, we'll do it. They put it behind lock and key. Nobody can ever, you know, try to mimic or duplicate it. And there are times when other people try to hire chemists to try to match other people's spices and steal it, but ours hasn't come close to being matched yet, and it's delicious.
You keep winning awards for crabs.
Winning awards, yeah, yeah.
But lobbying.
I mean, the crabs are the crabs. I mean, the spice really makes the crab the crab. When it comes to the lay person who says, I want to have a crab, I mean, they can't tell. I mean, a person from Minnesota flying to Maryland having a crab can't.
I've had enough crabs that, like, they're all different. Now, as a kid, I wouldn't have known that.
Right.
They're just orange, and they got Obey on them, or whatever you'd say, you know, seafood. They're all different now.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Saltier, spicier, pepperier. I don't, you know, and I guess dressing a Northern Bay sweet crab with this.
You're a connoisseur. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, you could definitely tell the difference between that Upper Bay and that Lower Bay crab, to the Carolina crab, to a Georgia crab, which tastes like a paper pulp mill, to a Florida crab, which tastes like a bottle of sea salt, to a Louisiana crab, which is probably the closest to our crab. And then some guys buy stuff from Texas because they're really big, and everybody wants to buy big crabs, and, you know, they are okay. But, you know, that Upper Bay, Chesapeake Bay crab is the best crab in the world. There's no reason that anybody can argue and beat it. Have a taste test.
Now, is that an after July 15 thing as you see it?
No.
No.
No. So crabs are here right now. We're crabbing as we speak. We crab today. We're north of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. You hear everybody say, oh, you got to wait until the lightning bugs start flashing before you catch a crab above the, you know, chop tank.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's what the old people say.
There's a lot of, I mean, crabs, they're going to different depths. They're going to different bottoms. They're going to, you know, different areas of salinity, different times of the year, and you just have to know where they're at, and you go to them, and you catch them. And it's really that easy. But you know, most people just, if they're not in that river by that one point, by that falling down tree, by that guy's house on the pier, and they're not biting that chicken neck, then those people say that the crabs aren't there until July 15th. Or they're not at that one bridge piling until June 15th because, you know, they could be really close to them, and they're not watermen.
You got to get out there.
You just got to be a waterman.
You do anything else? You do the marlin or any of that kind of? I see your performance fishing here.
It just was a very comfortable shirt to wear. My friend Ben Werner actually started the company. He's a local curly guy, and I got some free apparel. I don't buy clothes.
I've seen all the guys wearing that stuff, so I know some of the
it's
marlin people.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, my buddy Brian Eater runs Chaucer. He's always in the marlin, so we did that last year too. But just being out on the water, I mean, that thing's crazy. They 100 miles offshore, 5 in the morning, out in the sun, like trying to catch a 2,000-pound creature.
That's fun fishing. That's not what we do. I mean, it's fun fishing. That's fun. Like, you go out there, you're like, hey, guys, let's go out and catch some fish. It's fun. What we're doing is fun, but it's not work. It's work, right, yeah. And those guys will say it's work, too. You know, shout out to those big
I saw them. They're tired as hell when they get home.
And yeah, they got like, turn their hand around in a circle and reel that reel. I mean, that's really tiring, isn't it?
I think you get a button for that, don't you?
Right,
I think you can have that. No button to pull the crabs in. Tony Comrades here. We're Comrades Crabs for being our guest. He's going to get a Maryland Lottery ticket. Big thanks to all of our sponsors at Goodwill, our newest sponsors at Window Nation, and the Conrad family sponsoring us here for all the locations. So I mean, where your locations are, and they are different. I mean, the markets are different than... I remember this is Perry Inn, right? Like many, many moons ago.
Oh, yeah.
I remember what it looked like over here in a bar and a disco ball and like all that. You've taken each one of these locations and made it your own, for sure. I mean,
yes.
The place up in Abingdon was a failed Joe's Crabs, you know, thinking Joe was going to move in here and sell crabs in Bel Air.
Joe.
I think we needed Tony to move in. But local matters here, right?
Absolutely.
And when you move into Perry Hall and have a neighborhood place here, I had a young man from Wise, Nick, who grew up on the street down here. He came up today and said he's seen all the whole neighborhood change. You're from Loch Raven, close to where my radio station is. Why here? I mean, you strategically pick these neighborhoods, and you pick places, and obviously it's doing pretty well.
So this location, just like every other location, it was the grace of God that, you know, it came to us. It was a gentleman by the name of Mickey Coachella. I don't know if anybody's heard of that.
Yeah,
little,
I know
little
him.
Short, bald-headed, goofy-looking creature.
I saw him
creature.
Do his comedy act 3 weeks ago.
And it was funny, wasn't it?
I'm still laughing.
No, he's a great guy. But anyway, he came to me and said, Tony, you got a great spot. Let's open up a restaurant. I was talking 100 miles an hour. I said, Mickey, slow down. What the hell are you trying to say? And he wanted to open up a crab restaurant. And our relationship was going to start. And he had some personal things, God bless him. And we wound up meeting the landlord here and kept following through with the process. And Mr. Rupert, God bless his heart, probably one of the nicest men I've ever met in my entire life. And again, very inspiring. Everybody that we've met along the way, and why each individual location is positive and productive, is because of the people that we worked with at each location. And Mr. Bill,
well, feels good going in.
Absolutely,
right.
He was on our side. He was up pro, you know, Conrad's, and it was just number one going forward. And our that's when we were kind of building our team for the restaurant, because the whole market is a different animal than a restaurant is. I mean, everybody that says you're going to open up a restaurant, you're crazy. I'd rather have 100 markets than have one restaurant. And man, were they right. You know, it's like it's a lot of work. You got 100 times the employees, where at the market you can have 10. You got to have 100 here for the same, you know, kind of capacity. But anyway, Mr. Bill was great. We told him our vision, what we wanted to do. We said we wanted to keep it local. We want to be a family place. We want to be closed at 10 o'clock if we can. I don't want to have a busy bar. I don't want to do, you know, bar specials. I want to do, hey, come in, enjoy local.
Although it
coffee.
Is happy hour here all day today. I want to point
it,
that out. I found that out.
What it's grown into is a bar family style atmosphere, but it's a very clean, friendly bar. I mean, it's not the, you know, you're not going to have the late rocking music and bar fights and people shooting. It's
and you
good,
get a pretty good
fun.
Crab here too.
It's okay, yeah.
Yeah, you get a good crab here.
Yeah. Everyone.
Well, the place is rocking. I want to get out of here because you got. Thank you. It's taken
yes,
a long
sir.
Time to meet
yes,
you.
Sir.
Thanks for coming on and giving me your story. And I have friends that swear by your crabs. They just all want, they only eat crabs with you. And I guess that's why you're winning awards for this, because people are, they become loyal to the spice, the seasoning, and the fact that you got a story. You're the one guy with your name on the door. You're out in the water in the
morning.
And everybody knows that about
you. We care about our people.
That's why it's hard to get you on a show. You're out on the water all day.
I don't like this stuff. This stuff's terrible. Your hair looks nice, by the way.
You did really. Well, thank you. It pulls out. No.
Yeah.
It's COVID, man. I had same hair as you 2 years ago. That is, you could grow it like this if you wanted to. Yeah, you still got a lot of color in
they
there.
They still had scissors at Walmart during COVID. But that's okay. It looks good. Looks good. It looks
my
good.
Wife likes it. It's not
that's
for
all
you.
That matters. That's all that matters.
My thanks to Tony Conrad. We're having our final cocktail out here. I've got the Purple Haze. It's a Beta product. This is what I drank the night before the Ravens won the Super Bowl in New Orleans.
Amen.
And I haven't had it in like
I was there.
9 years.
It was a great time.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah,
we can. My thanks to all of our guests that came by today. Should I name names? John Wyman came by. We had, let's see, Ed Mullen came by. Bill Cole came by. Let's see if I can remember them all. It was 3 hours ago. I forgot
Councilman
the first
March.
Hour's guest. Councilman March came by, absolutely. And we also had Nick from Wise Markets, and I know I left... Somebody else was on the show.
Tony Conrad.
Oh, Tony was here, too.
Yeah.
My thanks to everybody. We'll be back for more right after this. We are Baltimore's finest, formerly sports radio station, now talking crabs. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.